Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Installment number 54 was titled Oppressed by the Press. This is installment number 113, Suppressed by the Press. I hope you'll stay tuned. American commercial journalism is close to dead, and boy, should we feel ambivalent. The news media have deceived us and betrayed us for a century. And if any unnatural creatures deserved wooden stakes driven through their hearts, it's the enterprises of Rupert Murdoch, the BBC, Tribune Corp, the New York Times, Time Life, Inc., and their ill-gotten junior brethren. However, though they've done America, let's say, 85% harm and 15% good, when they completely croak, the 15% good portion will decline to near zero. As I say, ambivalence. In two decades, my local rag, the Hartford Courant, has descended from a halfway decent paper to the point where my cat refuses to allow scraps of it in her litter box. 50 years ago, every major city had 2, 3, even 4 major competing newspapers. Now they're lucky if they have even one monopolistic, non-competing paper. And even that's on its way out. This is not the fault of the internet. It happened because big corporations bought up all the small newspaper companies. And the Wall Street owners of those big corporations demanded unsustainably high profit margins from all those holdings. Major newspapers used to generate around 10% profit, and they prospered for many decades at that level. Now Wall Street is demanding 20 to 25% profit margins in the near term, and to heck with the long term. That level of profit cannot be obtained without firing 2/3 of all your reporters and editors and bleeding the paper dry, which they are doing. Then the reporting goes to blazes, disgusted subscribers cancel left and right, and management blames the resulting failure on the internet. Like I said, I'm ambivalent. Store-bought kitty litter is expensive. And the Northeast would be a better place if the Hartford Courant ever tried to be a real newspaper and stopped aspiring to be, say, just a daily edition of Soap Opera Digest. Apparently, at one time it really was a real newspaper, though it's been heading downhill since I moved to Connecticut 25 years ago. But to get a sense of the enormity of the problem, we have to understand how terribly the press has betrayed the citizens for decades and decades. In mine humble opinion, even the best of the surviving news media are just a sea of total propaganda flooding us on behalf of the elite ruling interests. But we'll start with a great essay by Robert Freeman on the 10 most important stories that the media did not report in the noughties. That's the decade beginning 2000, not, get it? I'm going to interrupt the list after the first item, which is the coup d'etat in November 2000, which installed as president a drunken draft dodger and failed businessman who had come in second not only in the popular vote, but also in the electoral vote. You'll recall that the 2000 presidential election was a squeaker, hinging on an extremely close official tally in the state of Florida. Well, guess what? Democrat Albert Gore won the majority of the popular votes, and hence all the electoral votes, in Florida. Thus, Albert Gore won the 2000 presidential election. Many news media realized this at the time. They all realized it a year later, after a recount that they themselves paid for. Guess what story they didn't want you to worry your pretty little head about? It would not have made a huge difference had President Gore taken office. He's every bit the pro-corporate, anti-democracy, fascist warmonger that little Bush was and Obama is. But still, doesn't the winner of the 2000 election sound like a story that our constitutionally protected guardians of democracy might have mentioned somewhere? Page 6 of Section B, at least? Okay, here's the real top 10 stories of the past decade. published New Year's Day 2010 in Common Dreams by Robert Freeman. Verbatim. The media are awash with talking heads bloviating about the top stories of the last decade. The wired-in society, the growth of organic food, the new frugality. This is the ritual that reveals their true function in the culture, pacification. It's their way of signaling to the masses that bigger thinkers are looking after things, so go back to your Wii or Survivor or Facebook reveries. The amazing thing is how little is ever mentioned about the stories that really mattered. Those that affected the very nature of our society, its institutions, and the relation of the people to the state and society. These stories paint a picture of danger, of a people who have lost control of their government and the corporations that own it. But you'll hear nary a word about such difficult truths from any storyteller in the conventional media. So here, in no particular order, are my top 10 stories of the naughties, the ones that really matter. 1. The Supreme Court hijacking the 2000 presidential election. This isn't even a historical controversy anymore. Al Gore won the national popular vote by 570,000. And we now know he would have won the Florida vote as well, if the vote counting had not been stopped by the Supreme Court. This was literally a right-wing judicial coup d'etat, so it's understandable that it's never mentioned in the right kind of circles. Okay, let me break in with a digression here, because this has been a bee in my bonnet for the past decade. I want to supplement that brief account with a longer version, Gore's Victory, by Robert Parry, published November 12, 2001, in Consortium News. I have edited and condensed this for radio. Al Gore was the choice of Florida's voters, whether or not one counts hanging chads or dimpled chads. That was the core finding of the 8 news organizations that conducted a review of disputed Florida ballots. By any measure, Gore won. Gore won, even if one doesn't count the 20,000 votes that USA Today says Gore lost because of illegally designed butterfly ballots. Or the hundreds of African-American voters who were falsely identified by Florida as felons and turned away at the polls. Gore won, even if there's no adjustment for George W. Bush's windfall from improperly counted military absentee ballots. Here, lax accounting standards were applied to Republican counties, and strict standards were applied to Democratic ones. George W. Bush was not the choice of Florida's voters, any more than he was the choice of the American people. Sidebar comment, 8 major news organizations commissioned the respected pollsters, the Roper Organization, to conduct an unofficial but thorough recount of all the ballots cast in Florida. Roper's calculations were completed a year after the election was stolen, 2 months after 9/11. They showed that, by any sane standard of ballot inclusion or exclusion, Gore carried the state of Florida, and thus won the 2000 presidential election. Back to the text. Parry continues. Yet possibly for reasons of patriotism in this time of crisis, the news organizations that financed the recount twisted their stories on it to indicate that Bush was the legitimate winner, with headlines such as, "Florida recounts would have favored Bush." That's from the Washington Post, November 12, 2001. Post media critic Howard Kurtz took the spin one cycle further with a story headlined, "George W. Bush, Now More Than Ever," in which Kurtz ridiculed as conspiracy theorists those who thought Gore had won. Kurtz also mocked those who believed that winning an election fairly, based on the will of the voters, was important in a democracy. He wrote, "How many people still care about an election deadlock that now faintly echoes like some distant Civil War battle?" In other words, the elite media's judgment is in, "Bush won, get over it." Both the Washington Post and the New York Times referred to critics of the official Florida election tallies as, quote, Gore partisans, unquote. Gore's Florida victory in the ballot recount might surprise many readers who skimmed only the headlines and the top paragraphs of the articles. The headlines and leads highlighted hypothetical, partial recounts that supposedly favored Bush. Buried deeper in the stories was the fact that the recount determined Gore was the winner statewide, even ignoring the butterfly ballot and other irregularities that cost him thousands of ballots. In its coverage of the recount, the national news media showed little regard for the fundamental principle of democracy, that leaders derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Presumably, the American people are supposed to accept that everything just turned out right. The Bush dynasty was restored to power. The proper order was back in place. Anyone who begs to differ is a conspiracy theorist or a Gore partisan. Now I'll speak in my own voice. Big business and big finance would have prospered under the Democratic administration of Albert Gore, just as they are now prospering under Obama. But they figured they'd prosper even more under Bush. Keep in mind that the American news media are not just friendly to big business. Now they are big business. Not just in November 2001, when they misreported the recount they themselves had paid for, but all through the 2000 campaign, they whitewashed Bush's prior record, his alcoholism, his drug use, his felony conviction or convictions, his record as governor of Texas, his repeated failures as a business executive, his disgraceful military record, the at least two criminal complaints of sexual harassment filed against him when he was governor by women who turned up dead or disappeared shortly after filing. They ignored even the bald-faced lies in his narrative of how he was born again. While turning a blind eye to all this, the media distorted and falsely mocked almost everything Gore said. But the loudest noise during that coup d'etat masquerading as an election was the silence of the Democrats as the coup entered its final phase. The Democrats, particularly and especially Albert Gore. Obviously, somebody told Gore not to make waves, to keep his mouth shut, and he'd be rewarded later. Would you like a seat on the Supreme Court as a consolation prize? How about a wild weekend getaway with Miley Cyrus? Maybe a Nobel Peace Prize? Sure, we can arrange a Nobel. It's not that you actually have to do something to promote peace to qualify. The alleged Democratic Party uttered not a peep about the coup and the stolen election, or the one 4 years later. And anybody the least surprised at the anti-citizen, pro-war, pro-corporate, pro-Wall Street behavior of Obama and his gang have simply not been paying attention to the entire 21st century. As Emile Zola said, I accuse, and stop drinking the Kool-Aid. Okay, enough for now about the American coup d'etat in 2000. A coup completed by the Supreme Court when it ordered the Florida recount to stop, but conducted by many additional perpetrators, notably the Republican Party and the state of Florida, with the able assistance of the top leaders of the Democratic Party. If that makes me a Gore partisan and a conspiracy theorist, so be it. We'll get back to Robert Freeman's catalog, The Real Top 10 Stories of the Past Decade, all of which the media chose not to report. But first, let's take a break. Here's David Rovics.
Cities are full of criminals. All of them are black. They'll shoot you for your shoes or to get a little crack. But the police are protecting us, locking up these thugs, making us all safer by being tough on drugs. There was a truck bomb in Baghdad, blew up the UN. These fanatics do not have care for innocent women and men. They don't like civilization, it's just destruction that they crave. There is no rhyme or reason for the way that they behave. it's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news. There's a war on in Colombia, and it's all about cocaine. The FARC is running drugs from Mexico to Maine. It's an ugly situation, but soon it will be whipped. We just need to send along more helicopter gunships. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on evening news. There was a bomber in Jerusalem, blew himself up on a bus. He was a funny looking Muslim, not like one of us. He didn't like the Jews, and he says that God is great. I don't know what his problem is, he's just so full of hate. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news. Evil men are plotting to blow up Washington, D.C. 'cause they don't like freedom and democracy. They're fans of the Dark Ages. They are all around. They're marching from the desert sand and coming to your town. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news. It's hard to believe, but I know it's true. I saw it on the evening news.
Okay, let's get back to Robert Freeman's The Real Top 10 Stories of the Past Decade. Number 2. Bush knew of 9/11 before it actually happened. 3 years before Bush took office, the neocons' Project for a New American Century called for a new Pearl Harbor to galvanize the nation into a war to seize Middle East oil. And even before the event itself, Bush as president was warned dozens of times of the imminent attack, the most notorious being the August 6, 2001 presidential daily briefing, titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. Amazingly, nothing was done to prevent the attack. But even less is it advertised that Bush knew. Suppressed story number 3. Iraq was all premised on lies, yet we're still there. Saddam Hussein wasn't pursuing weapons of mass destruction. He wasn't involved in 9/11. He wasn't engaged with Al-Qaeda. As with the 2000 election hijacking, we know all these things, and we know they were false at the time they were proffered. Yet there we are, with no intent to leave, our very presence spitting in the face of international law and the international community we so unctuously pretend to respect. Number 4. The Global War on Terror. Or more specifically, the ease with which the GWOT has replaced the Cold War as the justification for the ever-increasing militarization of society. What happened to the post-Cold War peace dividend? The U.S. continues to spend more on the military than all the rest of the world combined. It continues to maintain over 700 military bases around the world. And it continues to manufacture excuses for foreign interventions whenever weapons makers and military logistics companies need more profits. Which is forever. Top 10 real story number 5. The fact that 2/3 of all economic growth went to the top 1%. John Kennedy's social contract had a rising tide lifting all boats. But over the last decade, 2/3 of all economic growth has gone to the top 1% of income earners. Meanwhile, the middle class has suffered a $13 trillion write-down in wealth as a result of the housing collapse. The banking bailout and the health care, quote, reform, unquote, debate showed as never before the extent to which corporations have captured government and use it to redirect national wealth to themselves and their owners. Number 6. The neo-feudalization of the American economy. The top 1% of wealth holders own 41% of the assets in this country, while the bottom 40% own absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, workers are saddled with $12 trillion of national debt, an effective indentured servitude that will bind them to their corporate masters for the rest of their lives. This is the working definition of feudalism, where the rich own everything and everybody else has nothing but their proffered labor and their obligations to their masters. The Habsburgs, the Tudors, and the Bourbons would be jealous. Unreported story number 7, the surrender of civil liberties. Despite the Fourth Amendment supposedly protecting us against unreasonable searches and seizures, the government can now read your email and listen to your phone calls without any probable cause. The Obama administration has gone to court to prevent the reinstitution of habeas corpus, suspended during the Bush administration. We are much less free, much less protected from brutalization by our own government than we were just 10 years ago. Top unreported story number 8, the failure of the free market to sustain prosperity. The free market has long been an ideological dodge used to resist real government regulation of the economy. Still, the ideal was supposed to deliver prosperity in a stable, sustainable manner. Now we have the greatest global economic collapse since the Great Depression, with the government transferring $11 trillion to the banks to cover their sociopathically greedy bets that went bust. All in the name of deregulation, with future regulation vigorously resisted. Is this a deranged country or what? Number 9, the collapse of the media. We once imagined it would guard the henhouse. Yet that was an anomaly, a freak event around Vietnam and Watergate when it slipped its leash. Since then, 60 independent media outlets have consolidated into 5, all retailing the ideology of the powerful, the perpetrators, laundering their lies, covering up the truth, and harassing the truth-tellers. In every story mentioned above, the mainstream media have worked to ensure that the people don't know the truth about the forfeiture of their government, their wealth, their security, and their rights. Finally, number 10, the meaninglessness of elections. This is the most embittering revelation of all. Despite the greatest electoral majority since Johnson crushed Goldwater in 64, Barack Obama has betrayed everything he ran on. In every case where he had the opportunity to confront power, in financial bailouts, financial regulation, health care, wars and military spending, utilities and global warming, national surveillance, in every case Obama has sided with the rich and powerful against the interests of the American people. He has probably engendered more cynicism, more disaffection with government than any president since Richard Nixon. It will deal a staggering blow to the hopes of mobilizing masses of people again for a real take-back of government. And he's not even 1 year into it. Freeman continues, history paints decades with broad brushes. The Roaring Twenties, the Depression, World War II. Historians will look back on the knots as the time when Americans lost their country. It was the decade when all the institutions that they believed would protect them, the media, the courts, Congress, the market, a messianic new president, in fact betrayed them. It will forevermore be a different country. But not just yet. Did I tell you about the big move to locally grown produce? And there we have it. Robert Freeman, his New Year's Day article, The Real Top 10 Stories of the Past Decade, which somehow managed not to get reported by the commercial media. Since this will be on the test next week, let's have a quick review. 1. The Supreme Court hijacked the 2000 presidential election. 2. Bush knew of 9/11 long before it actually happened. 3. The Iraq invasion was premised on lies, yet we're still there. 4. The global war on terror is a scam. 5. 2/3 of all economic growth has gone to the top 1%. 6. The neo-feudalization of the American economy. Some others of us are referring to the same thing when we speak of the third worldization of America. Most important story number 7, the destruction of civil liberties. Number 8, the failure of the free market, quote-unquote, to sustain prosperity. Number 10, the meaninglessness of elections. All of the above aided and abetted by number 9, the collapse of the media. Let's end with a few minutes by Australian journalist, documentary filmmaker, and media critic John Pilger, speaking in Chicago in, I believe, late 2006. Pilger's main point is that the media are not failing. Rather, they're succeeding in doing exactly what they were set up to do ever since the birth of modern commercial journalism in the early 20th century.
Well, the title of this talk is Freedom Next Time, which, of course, is the title of the book. And the book is meant as an antidote to the propaganda that's so often disguised as journalism. Edward Bernays, the so-called father of public relations, wrote about an invisible government which is the true ruling power of our country. He was referring to journalism, the media. That was almost 80 years ago, not long after corporate journalism was invented. It's a history few journalists talk about or know about, and it began with the arrival of corporate advertising. As the new corporations began taking over the press, something called professional journalism was invented. To attract big advertisers, the new corporate press had to appear respectable, pillars of the establishment, objective, impartial, balanced. The first schools of journalism were set up, and a mythology of liberal neutrality was spun around the professional journalist. The right to freedom of expression was associated with the new media and with the great corporations, and the whole thing was, as Robert McChesney put it so well, entirely bogus. For what the public didn't know was that in order to be professional, journalists had to ensure that news and opinion were dominated by official sources. And that hasn't changed. Go through the New York Times on any day and check the sources of the main political stories, domestic and foreign. You'll find they're dominated by governments and other establishment interests. That's the essence of professional journalism. Think of the role Judith Miller played in the New York Times in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq. Yes, her work became a scandal, but only after it had played a powerful role in promoting an invasion based on lies. But Miller's parroting of official sources and vested interests was not all that different from the work of many famous Times reporters, such as the celebrated W.H. Lawrence, who helped cover up the true effects of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima in August 1945. "No radioactivity in Hiroshima ruin," was the headline on his report, and it was false. The great Irish muckraker Claude Coben got it right when he wrote, "Never believe anything until it's officially denied."
Thanks for listening. New World Notes comes to you from WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed are my own. Send me feedback or learn more about the show at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Let's all keep trying to act as though the truth were true, and see you again next week. Ciao.